Eye on the World, Behind the Black. Bob Zimmerman is here. He keeps Behind the Black, watching space exploring and space engineering. We begin with engineering because ULA, a company that I thought was for sale, has completed a Delta IV heavy launch. Bob provides a photograph. It looks very impressive. Bob, why do we need this launcher? What is it for? Good evening to you.
We don't need it anymore, John. It doesn't exist anymore. This is its very last launch. ULA, it's a very impressive rocket. Until the Falcon Heavy came along, it was the most powerful rocket in the United States. And it is a very impressive rocket, but it's also extremely expensive and cumbersome. And so United Launch Alliance had this rocket, and it's a family of rockets. Depending on how you configure it, you can have different kinds of Delta IVs. This is the most powerful version, the Heavy. So ULA had this rocket and had the Atlas V rocket. And it's been in the process for the last few years, retiring both of those rockets and to replace it with their Falcon Centaur rocket, their Vulcan Centaur rocket, their new rocket. They launched the new rocket once. They have now retired the Delta IV Heavy, the Delta IV entirely, the whole family. This was the last launch. They put up a National Reconnaissance or Surveillance satellite, which is what mostly it was used for, but it did many other things over its history. It was a very successful rocket. Delta family of rockets from their entire history, going back, I don't know, maybe 30 years, it was really an incredibly successful rocket. But once again, it was a very expensive, expendable rocket, and it does not compete anymore on the launch market. So ULA has now retired it. And it now has just Atlas V's and Vulcan Centaur rockets. And the Atlas V is also, the production line has ceased. So when they finish out launching the last few Atlas V's, they'll be just to the Centaur, the Vulcan Centaur. And then the question you raised about this company for sale, John, ULA is supposedly for sale. There have been lots of rumors about who's going to buy it, but there's been no announcements of any kind. If one of the rumors is Blue Origin will buy it, if Blue Origin buys it, then it's going to be very complicated what's going to happen, because Blue Origin has its own orbital rocket, not yet flown, called the New Glenn, which is more powerful than the Vulcan Centaur. That's not necessarily bad. You get some variety. You get two different rockets to offer customers. But we don't know. We don't know if they're going to buy it or not, so we'll just have to wait and see.
A big brief from Elon Musk after he promised that in 5 years AI would be smarter than all of us. He sure looks like he's feeling smart right now. Key Bob, he has big plans, but what about the fourth test? When is it scheduled?
The fourth test, you know, he says they're going to be ready in early May for the fourth flight, test flight of Super Heavy Starship. And I believe him when he says early May. That does not mean he will fly in early May. I predicted they won't fly till probably June. And maybe later, because they're going to be waiting for the bureaucrats in the FAA to dot the T's and cross the I's, or the other way around. And so they won't launch. It's going to be no earlier than early May, but it'll probably be later. But what happened is, over the weekend, Musk gave a presentation update to the people that work for him at Boca Chica, and it was available on Twitter, on X. And so I watched it and then posted an update on Behind the Black of all the main bullet points that Musk may announced. Having to do with that fourth test and Starship Super Heavy, Musk says that there's an 80 to 90% chance that they're going to attempt a chopstick tower landing of Super Heavy by the end of this year. He says that they want to do at least one precision ocean landing with Super Heavy. Once they've completed an ocean landing that lands exactly where they expected it to in the ocean, they're going to attempt to bring it down next to the tower and have the chopsticks grab it, which is pure science fiction, but they say 80 to 90% chance they're going to attempt that this year. Starship, however, will not attempt a chopstick landing at the tower as quickly. They want to have at least two precision ocean landings before they attempt it. There's a lot of reasons why, partly because Starship's coming back from orbit, and so it has a lot more issues that have to get straightened out first. So that's going to take a little longer. I should point out that they're going to have four towers operationally think by next year, and that's going to make it possible to take the risk of landing one of these ships next to a tower, because they're going to have two towers at Boca Chica and two at Cape Canaveral, with the Cape Canaveral operation by next year. And so that's going to make this more likely. He hopes to launch at least six Super Heavy starships in 24. That's going to be almost impossible based on how the FAA is functioning and how the Biden administration is slowing them down. In 25, they hope to do a full refueling of a Starship in orbit. They say that by the third iteration of Starship Super Heavy, we're still really in the first iteration. But by the third iteration, as they develop this, as it begins, becomes operational, they expect to be able to put 200 tons in orbit. That's twice as much as a Saturn V rocket. That's twice as much. It's three times as much as SLS. And he says that third iteration will probably cost about $2 to $3 million to launch, which is less than the Falcon 1 rocket, the tiny Falcon 1 rocket that SpaceX started its business with. Now, that's the cost. They're going to charge more because there's no reason to charge that little. They have a lot of margin in the market. And then he talked a great deal about building Mars. He's very big on the idea that the human race needs to have more than one planet for its future survival. We can't have all the eggs in one planet, in one basket. And so he wants to make a Mars colony. That's his whole goal behind this. And he thinks that once he's got Starship functioning like this, he plans to send a large fleet of Starships to Mars every 2 years when the flight windows open. So he's anticipating there'll be a fleet of starships going to Mars to establish that colony. Whether there'll be people on them initially is he didn't raise the question, but he definitely is going to start really big. He talked about landing sites on Mars, which confirms that I have a map on Behind the Black showing where his most likely landing area is on the northern lowland plains. And if everything goes right, Musk expects to establish a Mars colony in about 2 decades. That's his plan, which, by the way, would match the prediction of Wernher von Braun in 1954 when he said it will probably be 100 years before we have a Mars colony. And guess what? Elon Musk is targeting that date almost precisely.
Wow, Bob. Just wow.
Wow. Yes, wow is a good word. Yes.
Just wow. Nothing comparable to this, not the Chinese, not the Russians, not NASA, nothing. Nobody talks this big. Nobody.
But what's very important, there are people that do talk this big, John. I think of a guy named Bezos who talks this big. But unlike everybody else who might talk this big, Elon Musk delivers. And so that's what makes it really wow. We should be very confident that this is going to happen in some manner close to what he says. It might not be in the same time frame, but soon.
200 tons to orbit?
Yes, a starship.
That makes orbit like suburbia.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right. I mean, think about that a minute. $2 to $3 million with this reusable starship, Super Heavy, to put 200 tons into orbit. It makes the cost of putting mass into orbit tiny. Tiny, and since it's a giant cargo bay, you could put lots of different things in it very easily. It simplifies what you want to launch. You don't have to worry about weight so much. All things become possible. And like the Saturn V, once you get this kind of mass capability into orbit, it does not take much additional energy to go anywhere in the solar system. The amount of energy to go to the moon is not that much different than the amount of energy you need to go to Pluto. And so this really, if this works as he's planning, it will open up the solar system to human colonization.
It occurs to me that Four Seasons Hotel that recently shut down in San Francisco because of trouble, they better get ready for Earth orbit, Bob.
If they were smart.
All right. We have another idea that turns out to be investable. Varda. What is it, Bob?
Yes, we talked about Varda a few times in the last few weeks. Varda had a capsule up in orbit, an unmanned capsule, that was recoverable. And it got that capsule back after about 7 months. And in that capsule, they were doing a demonstration engineering test of technology to produce pharmaceuticals in space, in weightlessness. Because some pharmaceuticals in weightlessness can be produced much cheaper and also can be produced. On Earth, you can't produce them. So this has always been known, always, that if you could produce pharmaceuticals on waitlists, you have a viable product if you can do it cheaply enough. And it's definitely cheaper than on the ground. And so they sent this test capsule up. They got the results back about a week ago. I talked about this on your show. And I said at the time that these results say to me that they're going to have a very easy time now getting investment capital to send their capsules up more often and to actually start making money from this. And lo and behold, this past weekend, Varta announced that they have quickly raised $90 million of private investment capital after they published the results from that first orbital manufacturing mission. And so they already have a second returnable capsule scheduled for launch this summer by Rocket Lab, and they have a series of capsules down the road, and they're going to definitely be doing more tests to upgrade the technology, and you can expect them to start making real money from this, from pharmaceuticals, from space very soon, John.
All right. A startup wants to build an inflatable module. What is that, Bob?
Yes, we have inflatable modules already. There's one working on ISS right now called the Beam module that was built by Bigelow. Sierra Space is a partner in the Orbital Reef Space Station, and they're building inflatable modules for that space station. The idea of an inflatable module is it when launched, it's much smaller, so it can get on the rocket and fit. But when you get it into space, you inflate it. It literally, you make it grow, and so that it becomes a much bigger habitable space and a more useful. Most inflatables up to now have used basically basket weaving technique, where the fabric on the outside crisscrosses each way, and then it expands. There's a new startup called Max Space that is building a test inflatable module that hopes to fly on an ISS launch next, a SpaceX launch next year. And it's in testing a new design for inflatable modules. Now, they don't go into all the specifics because obviously it's proprietary, but they say instead of having the cross-weave, basket-weave concept, their design is all in one direction. So what it does is it simplifies the test. It makes it very scalable. And it also has safer margins, they claim. And so if that's the case, they could very quickly be building modules that could fit in a Falcon 9 rocket very easily. And once expanded in orbit, would have more volume than ISS complete, one module. And they're not intending to make space stations. What they're going to do is they're building this module, and they're going to offer it as a product to others, such as space station companies. So if you want a space station module, you buy it from Max Space. They're also going to offer it to various government agencies, such as the military, because the modules could possibly be used as storage facilities in orbit for preparation when you want to bring something down later. And so this is a startup. They're very beginning. It's not proven yet. But the people who came up with this idea had worked on Bigelow's early private Genesis 1 and 2 modules that were basket weave design, and they know their stuff, I would assume, and so they've come up with a better design. We'll see how it goes.
All right, a couple of minutes, Bob, on Argentina. There's a new president, Javier Milei. He's libertarian. He's moving in a direction market-oriented. At the same time, the previous regimes, the Peronistas and the Kirchneristas, were extremely disposed towards our adversaries. That would be the People's Republic of China, Iran, Tehran. Milei is the new kid in town. And you have an item up here about a Chinese space location in Argentina. I believe it's in Patagonia that opened in 2017. But we don't know what's in it. So what is Milei going to do about it?
Here's the deal. Back in 2014, Argentina signed a deal with China to put an antenna facility in Argentina that began operating in 2017 with a 50-year lease. They say it's an antenna facility. It's likely mostly used as communications for their manned and planetary missions, but this is China, so everything is military as well. And they have controlled it, China, entirely and not let anyone from Argentina in to see what's going on. And so Milei has basically told them that ain't going to fly anymore. We're going to inspect this place, and we're going to see what's there. And our deal says that 10% of the resources in the base must be utilized by Argentina, which means you got to hire Argentinians, or you, once again, we have access to it. And so he's moving in, and he's telling China, you're no longer going to have carte blanche here. And that's an interesting thing and probably good. China will deal with it. They, I think, once again, mostly wanted this for their planetary and on-demand programs. So they could very easily pull back the military aspect of this or be prepared to do it secretly when no one's looking.
However, China will, at the same time, continue to disrupt the information in Buenos Aires, as Russia does, as others do, because Malaya is considered to be pro-U.S. All right, good for him. One more item. Turkey is joining China's lunar, what is it called? International Lunar Research Station.
This is their version of the Artemis Accords. China is putting together a partnership to build its lunar base. While we have our Artemis Accords, we have like 36, 37 nations part of it. China's been trying to put a whole bunch together. They've got now 9 nations. Turkey is the most recent to join. They've also signed about 9 academic organizations. It's much smaller. The irony is that no one really wants to join a totalitarian partnership like this. They don't trust China. But the irony is that China is probably more likely to build its base on time than we will, because it's got a much more rational program, is the sad part.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're going exploring. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.